Welcome to the Husband Material Podcast, where we help Christian men outgrow porn. Why? So you can change your brain, heal your heart, and save your relationship. My name is Drew Boa, and I'm here to show you how. Let's go. Hey man, before this episode begins, I would like to announce the new Husband Material Community app. We are moving our private community away from Facebook and our Facebook group to husbandmaterial.app. It's already live. You can go check it out at husbandmaterial.app. Don't worry, the Facebook group will still be there. But I'm creating this new community to be more inclusive for everyone who stays away from social media because you don't want to get distracted or sexually triggered or deal with the ads and the algorithms. It's also more secure and stable, giving me more ways to communicate, more power to allow you guys to connect at a deeper level. It's for Christian men only. And to celebrate this new community, we are having a live Q&A event with Jay Stringer on April 21st. All of our live episodes and events from here on out will be held within the community app, and you can get it at husbandmaterial.app. I hope to see you there. Go check it out before you listen to the rest of this episode. And always remember, you are God's beloved son, and in you, he's well pleased. Welcome to Husband Material. I'm so excited because today on the show, we have Jay Stringer, author of Unwanted. What's up, Jay?
Hey, Drew. Thank you for having me on your show. It's so good to be with you.
Yes, you're welcome. It kind of feels weird that this is the first time we've actually recorded an episode together.
It's bizarre. I've felt that as well, where we've collaborated on so much. And then I'm like, I haven't been on your podcast yet.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised.
So that's why today we are reversing that. And we are going to talk about something which might not seem directly related to porn and yet is so core. It's just so crucial to healing and growth and maturity and wholeness. And that is conflict. And even just saying that word stirs something within me. Mm-hmm. How about you?
I'm immediately just drawn into my own conflict with my kids, with my wife, kind of with past unresolved conflicts. So yes, it is a word that is thick and layered with meaning.
So for those of us who struggle with unwanted sexual behavior, unwanted sexual attractions, why do we need to address conflict?
Yeah. I think a good starting point with conflict would just be, a lot of times when we hear that word, the immediate kind of sense that comes over our body is just like, ugh, I got to get out of this. I got to run away. But the reality is that conflict is neither good nor bad. So relationships, all of life, is basically a messy container of transformation. And so when we think about conflict, what we need to kind of go back to, I think of Romans 7, right, where there is a conflict in me. I want to do what is good, but I also want to do what does not bring goodness, glory, and beauty to life. So when we just think about it in our everyday life, I want to eat 2 to 3 apple fritters every day. I love fried dough. So good with apples, sweetness. But I also want to be relatively healthy, right? So there is a conflict brewing inside of me where I want something, but I also don't want something. And that sense of conflict is actually how we grow. Conflict with God is how we grow spiritually. Conflict with our spouse is how we grow in our relationships. Conflict with our sexual drives and desires is how we mature and outgrow those unwanted sexual behaviors. So I think part of what we have to do right from the start is to say, do we invite? Maybe we're not terribly fond of conflict, but can we at least invite that conflict is actually a crucible for us that is intended to mature us, to deepen us, to make us better lovers of God and one another?
Yeah. For most of us, I think conflict feels like a place where we get stuck, mm-hmm. where I'm not growing. What you're saying is no conflict, no growth.
No growth. Yeah. So I think we got to address it from a couple categories, and we could think about conflict as it relates to sexual desires. We could address conflict as it relates to our spouse or our core relationships, and also, you know, just conflict as it relates to kids. And so if we were to think kind of just initially, one of the examples that comes to mind is I was doing an intensive with an individual who avoided conflict. And this is what happens to a lot of us who struggle with unwanted sexual behavior, is that we have a lot of desire in life, but we don't feel like our spouse, we don't feel like God, we don't feel like our world is deeply committed to giving us the desires of our heart. And so instead of actually fighting with God to be able to say, like, where are you? Where are these promises that you have decreed and that you have said? We begin to get complacent and we begin to step away. Same thing with a marriage. I think each of us, when we enter marriage, we have a lot of illusions entering marriage, but we also have really beautiful hopes for what marriage could be. But within 6 months, you realize I'm not the person that I thought I was. My wife is not the person who I wanted her to be. And in that breakdown, a lot of us, especially as men, can try and take the conflict outside of the fight within our marriage, and then we fight through unwanted sexual behavior. So if you're displeased with your wife, if you don't like how she's not attending to you emotionally, sexually, sometimes what ends up happening is fine. I'll go to pornography. I'll go to some fantasy that even in the midst of having sex with her, I'm going to go to another place that I know is a fantasy that doesn't bear a lot of honor. I'm going to go and escape. I'm going to fight basically outside of the marriage. And so what I was originally trying to talk about with this marriage intensive was that this gentleman just did not like conflict. And maybe just for framing purposes, what I should try and say is that, you know, there's a tension between conflict and repair. Most of us tend to be pretty calcified or bent towards one end of the extreme. So some people love conflict, and these are the people that, you know, you get off a call with them and you're just like, I never want to see that person ever again. They use intimidation, they use force, they use aggression. But then there's also people who just want repair all the time. These are the Enneagram twos. Where they want to be helpful, they want to be sacrificial. But usually when you leave the call with them, you're like, why did I have a butler for the last 30 minutes? Why were they catering to anything and everything that I said? I felt like they didn't have any sense of self. And so that is usually the, you know, the extremities that we oscillate between of, you know, I want my will, I want my relationship to change. I want to enter conflict, but I'm afraid that if I enter conflict, then I'm going to lose that person that I deeply care for. And so I'm going to be more calcified towards repair. And so this gentleman that I was working with was much more calcified to a type of repair, a type of attunement, where he never wanted to disappoint his wife. And so one of the ways that that played out was, you know, I'll change some of the examples, but he really, really loved rock climbing, and he wanted to rock climb, but in the midst of getting married, he realized that that desire and having kids, he eventually needed to just resign to the reality that he wasn't going to be able to do it very much. Well, in his marriage, he began to resign to so many of the desires in his heart, and then began to resent his wife for placing expectations on him that he couldn't possibly meet, and just realizing that he really didn't have any life outside of his marriage, outside of his work. And so during the course of our intensive, that was a lot of what we needed to engage was, you're a man of deep desire. And when that deprivation of your desire is taking place, you feel really entitled to your unwanted sexual behavior because you've been depriving yourself of what you really want. And so long story short, last fall, he went out rock climbing and got a membership to a rock climbing gym. And you would think that, you know, his marriage would be so excited. There was almost as much conflict within their marriage as there was upon his disclosure. And so his wife was like, you know, you already have a work meeting, and now you're going to go out for a second night each week to be able to go rock climbing, and you're going to leave me with the kids all over again. And he entered that conflict. He didn't resign. And he said, no, this deeply matters to me. And if we need to pay extra money to get a babysitter so that you are not under that pressure, let's do it. And eventually what he told me about a week ago was the conflict that he entered and stayed in with his wife actually led her to recognize that she had totally been neglecting her own self-care, her own sense of like what found life for her. And he didn't go into the details of what exactly she began to pursue for life. But that's what ended up happening in their marriage, is to be able to stay in the tension of conflict actually allowed something to grow between them that made him healthier. But here's the key point. Whenever you make a unilateral change in a relationship, you force and cause the other person to change. And we rarely talk about this, certainly in ministries on our wedding day. But if I change, my spouse has to change. If my spouse begins to pursue desire, it's going to highlight the lack of my own. So one example of this would just be, you know, my wife, Heather, has been, I would say, working harder, at least for her career in this fall, than I have ever seen her work in the 11 years that we've been married. And usually I'm the one that's like working, burning the midnight oil, reading, researching, doing all that. But she has just been completely outworking. And what ends up happening is there's a conflict that comes in me of, why am I neglecting my next body of work that I really want to be doing? And just that sense of that, that's a really good conflict to enter into is, yeah, well, Heather, where are you? And she's like, I'm working. And I'm like, well, what about me? And that's going to force me back into, you know, what type of work do I really want to grow in? And so just that sense of conflict in relationships is so foundational to growth.
So by bringing my desires into this mess of two people who have real sacred longings that matter, if I actually bring my desires into there instead of dampening them or discarding them, that by doing so, it sounds like I can actually give the other person a gift of getting in touch with their desires.
Yes, but at first you make them miserable. And that's the only distinction that I would say is no one wants to change. That's where, I mean, even within, you know, the field that we're in, Drew, spouses deeply want us to change, but they're also afraid of our change because they know that if we really begin to change and we begin to grow, that's going to have ramifications on the relationship. And so that's what ends up happening in so many relationships, is that you pick someone that you know can help you basically move through life, kind of how you would want to move through it. And so what ends up happening through conflict, through betrayal, is something of the foundations of your marriage, of your relationship, really needs to shift because of what is getting exposed.
Man, this is not easy. Mm-mm. Misery. You're promising that it will be miserable if we actually do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, most of us come in, you know, I don't want to go into too much about narcissism today, but the core reality of narcissism, I know that's a word that's tossed around quite a bit. But at least when I was in high school, narcissism was always the sense of, you know, this guy who's driving his like Mitsubishi Eclipse with like a muffler microphone and just kind of wears, I can't even remember the style. It's like some Tommy Hilfiger thing. Like that guy's so narcissistic because he was so full of himself. But the reality of narcissism is, at least clinically, is not that you are full of yourself. It's that you don't have a sense of self. And so you don't know who you are without some reflection back to you. And so that reflection could be the amount of money that you make. That reflection could be how beautiful or successful your partner is. But there's always some sense of, it's a reflected sense of self, is I only know that I'm okay if my outside world begins to reflect back to me just who I am. Well, guess why we pick certain partners? Yes, we pick them because they love God, because they're kind, because we really like their families, but far more, we also like the reflected sense of self that we feel. So, you know, my wife was an artist. My wife didn't just kind of talk the Christian ease that most kind of Christian women that I had known, at least in up until seminary, had talked about. There was something different about her. And so that was part of, yeah, I want to be attached to that. I want the reflection back to me of like, I'm not just in Christendom. I'm actually edgy, at least back in the day. And so that was the reflected sense of self. But a lot of times we choose a partner because we're like, she is so kind. But then you get married and you wake up and you realize, no, this woman isn't just kind. She's also strong and fierce, and she's not going to let me get away with what I normally want to get away with. And then guess what happens? There's conflict, because the whole reason I gave you that ring was to help me feel better about myself. And now I'm feeling worse about myself. Well, that's a conflict, but that conflict is so necessary because so many of us are soothed and find our identity through being validated by other people. And that's why it's so necessary to enter into that misery, to enter into the conflict, is because that we need to outgrow not just unwanted sexual behaviors. We also need to outgrow that reflected sense of self. We need to outgrow our narcissism by bringing kindness to our lives, by getting a sense of what do we really want in this life.
Yeah. Yeah, what is it? What is our rock climbing? What is our next body of work? What is that thing which would be so difficult and agonizing to entertain the possibility of pursuing, and it's just easier to avoid it? What's that thing that God might be dreaming up for my life that feels like, oh, that would be too hard. That would be too miserable. What if it doesn't happen? It sounds like you're saying like, okay, that's a very sacred thing that we need to enter into. And on the way, it's really going to suck. And one of the concepts that you talk about in Unwanted is generative conflict. In other words, the kind of conflict that leads to growth. What is that?
I don't know. I think of like messy conflict as just kind of being, you know, I'm just going to be intimidating. And so I think we have to make a distinction that, you know, a lot of times people can use anything that anybody says as a justification to keep entering conflict, right? And so I think you have to check your heart. You have to know your impulses. You have to know, are the desires of my heart lovely? Are they good? Are they true? Are they beautiful? Or do I want to be very intimidating right now? Just with regard to something generative versus something messy, I know that there have been certain points in my marriage where I have just been pissed off with Heather. I don't want to build her up. I want to kind of enter into a conflict in order to reduce her, in order to amplify the shame in her life, in order to get it basically to the point of silencing her from having a voice to reflect back to me something of who I am. That's an example of messy, toxic conflict. The more generative approach would definitely be to be able to say, Dan Siegel has something that he has referred to as the window of tolerance. And so the window of tolerance is essentially, he wrote a really helpful children's book where he breaks it into the green zone, the red zone, and the blue zone. So the green zone is like, you know, I'm doing great. I have coffee. I have a decently meaningful life. I like my friends. My body feels pretty good. I'm going to stay in the green zone. But what ends up happening in the red zone is we get pretty, we enter into a place of hypoarousal, and that's where a lot of the anger, that's where a lot of the aggression, the entitlement begins to take place. And we lash out, we're mean. And then in the aftermath of all of that, we go into what's called the blue zone, which is, I said hypoarousal before, it was actually hyperarousal. And then what happens in the blue zone is that we enter hypoarousal. And that's much more of the depressed feelings. It's, I don't want to get out of bed. Yesterday was awful with my family. Yesterday was awful productively. I just don't want to engage life today. But what ends up happening in a lot of conflict is that you can get into the red zone and you're not very well regulated. You're not practicing what we refer to in the field as proprioception, which is, am I aware of my body state right now? Am I aware that my heart rate is elevated? Am I aware that my eyes are big and scary? Or have I actually calmed and soothed myself? And so if you want to enter into generative conflict, you've got to be something in the green zone. I mean, yeah, you can be in something of the red zone, but you need to be able to be at least aware of, I'm passionate right now, but I'm not going to be intimidated.
In my experience, sometimes we avoid the red zone by going straight to the blue zone, and that's where we use porn.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It can be straight to the blue zone. It can be red zone to blue zone, but you're right.
It's when I give up. It's when I check out.
Mm-hmm.
I leave. I'm done with this. This person, this situation, it's too much. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And generative conflict, you know, asks us to be far more introspective. So, you know, just that sense of why do I need my wife to desire me so much? Most of us will just say, well, that's natural to be desired, to be wanted. But I think part of what Jesus is getting at, especially in Matthew 5, is that lust can very quickly go into a covetousness. It's not, you know, it's translated adultery, but it's really a covetousness. And so you can lust for sex. You can lust to be married. You can be lust to be divorced. And so what ends up happening to a lot of us is we lust for our significant others to basically do something for us. And so in the few moments of my maturity in the last year, those have been the moments where I've entered into a generative conflict of, I need to be aware of where is the desire that's really good and beautiful actually beginning to be twisted into a type of demand. And why is that demand there? And so I think that that's part of prayer. I think that's part of having a good friend of just, you know, in these moments, I feel there is a demand in me that I don't even like. And so why am I being so demanding with my kids? What is up with that? And so I need to be able to do the work to be able to regulate myself, to be able to confront who I'm actually being, not just blame it on my inner child, not just blame, but I need to do that work, but I also need to have the integrity to say, is that who I want to be in the face of my family? So there might be some good themes around, yes, my kids need to listen a little better, but I also need to honor how their disregard for me actually has a type of dignity to it. Because if they only bowed in allegiance to everything that I said, they would have no self. They would have no development. So that sense of generative conflict actually requires that I step away from the relationship for a moment to be able to get a sense of, why am I so angry? Why am I so entitled? What themes is this present conflict actually highlighting from my past that are unresolved? And how is this conflict actually an invitation for my own healing, instead of just asking basically my spouse to change so I don't have to?
I think we can all pinpoint at least one situation right now in our lives that we either don't really want to deal with, or that we feel like dealing with in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
a place where we would rather avoid it, or we feel like we can't help but be aggressive. For somebody who is in that place right now, which I think is all of us, myself included, how can we move forward with curiosity and compassion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, one of the stories that comes to mind, and I'm going to use an example with my son, but I think it applies to a lot of things. There was a certain point where, I took my son on a kind of a significant trip when he turned 7. So when I was thinking about my son, I thought, like, this kid just loves to play. You get him within like 100 feet of water and he's like in it. It doesn't matter if it's a puddle, an ocean, a pool, he's just immersed in it. But there's also something about him that is just like full of exploration. I remember coming home from work a couple times and he would be listening to press conferences from NASA. And he would say like, "Dad, did you know that the NASA administrator, Jim Bridenstine, did this and this for the space program?" And I'm like, you're literally watching press conferences from NASA that are like the most obscure. So I wanted to take him on a trip to kind of mark this playfulness, but also this sense of exploration. Really good trip. We marked it. But then like probably 2-3 weeks later, my son just hit a different level of development and started challenging anything and everything that I would say, was like breaking stuff, was kind of throwing stuff. And it wasn't intimidating. It wasn't out of control. He was just disrupting. He was challenging. It was bedtime. I mean, it was basically everything. Like, when did my sweet 6-year-old become this kind of existential 7-year-old? And we entered into just a lot of conflict. And that was definitely due to COVID and being around each other more. But that sense of conflict, I wanted my will done in my family. I wanted to allow something of my anger to intimidate him into a sense of obedience. That was what my heart was. And so there was a couple points where I really needed to be able to check myself of being able to say, I just brought a 7-year-old to tears. I don't need to just repair and say, I'm sorry. I actually, before I even say sorry to him, I need to do the deeper work to be able to understand why is being an intimidating man, why is making my son feel small something of what I want in this season of his life? And so that, again, just took me into a deep dive into my own story, into my own life, into themes in my life that I haven't blessed my own disruption. I found a way of life that could be more of a good child, a golden child, and then I would be more disruptive in secrecy or in private. But my son was actually giving me the opportunity to enter into repentance of being able to say, can you bless what this boy is doing? That yes, he's playful. Yes, he loves exploration. But have you heard of any of the prophets in the Bible not being wildly disruptive to where they need to be? So I think being able to get a sense of just my own idolatry as a man, and that could be as it relates to being a dad, as it relates to being a husband, is where have I constructed an idol that my wife, my world, my work, my employees need to look and be a particular way, rather than actually being open to the reality that the Spirit of God is actually far more at work in the world around me, and that that's part of my job as a dad, as a husband, as an employer, is to basically be able to study what are these places of dignity that are emerging in the world around me. And whenever dignity emerges, it's not going to go into the Metropolitan Museum of Art or the Guggenheim. It has to start in a very raw, elementary way. And so just that sense of repentance for me is about being able to see and to bless these emerging desires that are taking place in my wife, that are taking place in my daughter and my son and the world around me.
So when they disrupt in one way or another, it's actually an opportunity to see the goodness in the other person.
Mm-hmm.
and also a mirror to our own depravity. No matter what the conflict is about, no matter what the situation is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We're being invited all the time through conflict to the possibility of transformation.
Yeah.
But most of us don't like conflict within ourselves, within right. the world around us. And we're missing a very vital opportunity for growth.
And that's a really important point too, because the conflict within ourselves can be blessed. Both sides of it. The part of me that wants to purge from porn, there's something to bless there. The part of me that wants to binge on porn, even there, something can be blessed. There's something good. There's a message that I need to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if we were to just kind of begin to take that where, you know, a lot of us, the scene that I described with my son and intimidating him, that's a reality that a lot of us have faced with our mothers and our fathers is, you know, we have to embody those memories of being able to welcome, like, when did you feel small? When did you feel used? And not just can you think back to a time, but can you actually re-embody what it was like as your mother or your father raged and berated you for something in front of your siblings, in front of your extended family? And so in the midst of that, again, we're dysregulated. We feel abandoned. We feel like we are much more, we belong far more to the dead than to the living in those years. And so in the midst of that, that might be the beginning of masturbation for a lot of us. And so just that sense of, yes, masturbation is a really loaded reality. But for a lot of us, that began with a type of self-soothing. That began with a type of, this is the first place that I ever experienced a level of pleasure. And so to use your language, Drew, like that's what we need to learn to bless, to be able to understand, to be able to say, I understand why I chose that. Is that the, you know, is porn the best thing for me? Absolutely not. I need to outgrow that, but I can at least begin to understand and bless why I chose it to begin with.
Yes. This is reminding me that if our sexual behavior really is a form of self-soothing or even self-contempt, and if porn is functioning as a pacifier, well, what is it that I need soothing because of? What is it that makes me hate myself? What is the pain that the pacifier is coming in to prevent? And I can't think of a time when it's not some kind of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That it's definitely a pacifier. And I think that we can never lose sight of the dual reality of, it's relief, but it also reinforces your core contempt. So I might hate myself. I might really be discouraged with who I am. And so I go to that pacifier. I go to that sense of relief. But, you know, you only need to go to porn 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times to be able to realize that almost always I feel more dysregulated. I feel more ashamed. I don't want to bring my face, my body, my voice to the world after I indulge. And so that sense of most of our unwanted behaviors actually amplify that core self-contempt within us. Yeah. And again, that tension of being able to say, yes, I can honor the pacifier. Simultaneously, I need to honor my integrity of being able to say, I feel like crap every single time that I engage that pacifier. And again, that tension between blessing of the pacifier, but also blessing that I don't want to feel like this anymore. And it's in that tension, it's in that friction that we begin the process of outgrowing those behaviors.
Amen. And if I really do learn to love myself and I dare to give my desires a voice and some room to grow, other people may not like it.
Mm-hmm. Especially will not like it. Yeah.
If we just limited ourselves to the conflict that we haven't dealt with, that we need to deal with, there would still be more than enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
and to find out, okay, what are those key themes? What are some of those places where I need to focus? I think your book Unwanted is a great place to start. And we came out with another resource. It's a free video series called The Sexual Fantasy Framework, which I'm going to put the link for in the show notes. And that can help you specifically with some of the fantasies that might be appealing when you're in the middle of a conflict.
Yeah. In that resource, you will get to hear some of the inner workings of my sexual fantasies, Drew's sexual fantasies. So it's a great resource to kind of get you started on just that path of curiosity. I think so much of my work that I do with men and women is just inviting people to see, like, yes, there's some really broken, difficult things that we have to deal with, but those difficulties, those antagonists in our story, the shame in our life actually has so much to teach us. And so that fantasy framework, the workbook that we worked on together, those are just really great places to begin to be curious about some of the difficulties that you find yourself in. And to kind of hold out the possibility that maybe this conflict, maybe this sexual fantasy could be a place where I experience something of the kindness and healing of God.
Yeah. It sounds so counterintuitive that in these places where, gosh, it's caused so much harm, we never want to go there again, that could actually be a place of healing.
Yeah. And just back to that, I mean, that the place of we mature, we grow kind of when we enter that fight and we reveal what's most true. I mean, I think, you know, after Adam has just eaten of the tree that he was commanded not to eat from, God basically says, like, where are you? What have you done? It's not, you know, bounce your eyes. Yeah. It's not bounce your eyes from the next tempting piece of fruit. It's not behavioral management. It's like, literally, like, where are you? Where have you been? And so if we are hearing the voice of God with regard to our conflict, with regard to our sexual struggles, are you hearing the questioning and the, you know, the interrogation, but a kind, curious interrogation of God to be able to say, where are you from? Where are you going? Why do you think this sexual fantasy, why do you think this conflict is so deeply disruptive to you at this point in your life?
And if this episode is bringing up more questions than answers for you, good news, Jay has agreed to do a live Q&A with us, which will be scheduled for later this week. And you can find more details in the Facebook group, or if you're signed up for emails or text messages from me. Jay, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Drew, thank you for having me on your show and bringing so much. I mean, conflict is so buoyant in a way. And now I feel like you've just like ruined the rest of my week because it's all these conflicts that I need to engage. So thank you for the opportunity to look a little deeper into my life.
Amen. And one more thing. What is your favorite thing about freedom from porn?
In terms of freedom, I mean, there's so many things that I could say. I think one of the core realities that I talked a little bit about was just the reality that most of us go to unwanted sexual behaviors not to self-medicate, not because we're bored, but far more for the purpose of judgment. And so when I look back at so many of the places in my life, there has been so much heartache from the role of shame and the role of accusation. So that has been against my face. It's been against my weight. It's been against my sexuality. And so I think there is something about unwanted sexual behavior that always amplified, always compounded those core accusations in my life. And so I think part of the sweetness of just not being bound to unwanted sexual behavior is that so many of the accusations that would just kind of stick to me like Velcro are no longer here. And so I think to be able to get a sense of, like, thank you, Jesus, for this life. This isn't just something that I need to hate myself and hate my desire and be at war for the rest of my life. This is something that I can actually look to God to say, like, you know, how do I thank you for this life that I get to live? And so I think just the sense of being far more caught in gratitude than caught in shame is the gift of a lifetime.
Beautiful. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And for everyone else out there, always remember, you are God's beloved son, and you, he's well pleased.